Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh, totally. Totally. Yeah. Of course, it's just unbelievable, to be honest, isn't it? I mean, how can they? I mean, goodness me. I mean, yet they see the world in that way. I've just been reading this absolutely, as you know, I'm a scientist, and I've just been reading this absolutely superb book. It's absolutely brilliant, and it's incredibly thought-provoking. Did you know that we've no clear definition of race? I mean, what do we mean by race? What is race? How can we talk about race if we have no clear definition of it? I mean, we can't even absolutely draw the line between one race and another. There is no such thing as race. It's just completely arbitrary. There's no clear border between one race and another. So, I mean, what do we mean by race? How can we talk about race if we don't even have a clear definition of what it means? Did you know that the definition of race has changed over time? We used to talk about the Irish as a race or the English as a race, and now we've altered our definition of race. So how can there be such a thing as race if the definition of race has changed? One of the things I discovered from this amazing book is that there's no one single gene that's only found in one race. So how can there be such a thing as race if there's no one single gene that delineates different races? I mean, it's an obvious question. How, if we can't define race, if we can't define it with 100% accuracy and totally clearly, how can there be such a thing as race? And anyway, even if we could, race is inextricably linked to colonialism, to racism, to National Socialism. And so, that being the case, how can race possibly be a scientific category if it carries with it that kind of cultural baggage, that kind of immoral baggage that means it's inextricably linked into many of the evils of humanity. So how can something that is linked to the evils of humanity define humanity? Surely something that relates to humanity and defines humanity must also define the good in humanity and the highest aspects of humanity. And race doesn't do that. There's no clear border between races. And so, I mean, this is an excellent book, and it's really got me thinking. What do we mean by race? What do we mean by science? Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to this edition of The Jolly Heretic. Now, that is the kind of illogical, fallacious, and generally appalling argument that you will hear from the midwit. And this is what I want to look at today. This is what I want to try and understand: the psychology of the midwit. The nature of the midwit. This is a term we've all heard bandied around on Twitter, bandied around on the internet, the midwit. And what I want to try and make sense of is, who is the midwit? What is the midwit? What makes the midwit? What makes certain people that write books with titles such as How to Argue with a Racist? What makes them who they are? What is their psychology? What is the psychology of a midwit? Well, first of all, let's start thinking about what a midwit is. So, in general, in intelligence tends to be measured by IQ tests. IQ tests are on a bell curve. Most people have an IQ of 100, and smaller percentages have IQs which go in either direction away from 100, with the average person being 100. Now, normally, a person who is extremely intelligent, who we would regard as a highly intelligent individual, as the kind of person that would be likely to have to be at least traditionally, not perhaps anymore, but traditionally be a scientist, is going to realistically have an IQ of at least 130, something like that. And the estimates for geniuses, for people that are regarded as making very, very important contributions to science and so on, indicate that they have IQs in the region of around 125, 130, something like that. So those are the outlier high IQ people. Those are people with very, very high IQ. Consequently, the midwit would be a person, I would say, that has an IQ of about 120. This is something like that. A person that is, or would have been some time ago, intellectually capable of being a doctor, intellectually capable of being a lawyer, but who you wouldn't have found in academia. You wouldn't have found in science. These are people. We've got studies from the 1960s that look at the IQ of people that are in different sciences and different science subjects that do PhDs in those subjects. And on average, people that are doing PhDs in things like biology and physics and the hard sciences, things like that, tend to have an IQ of at least 125, maybe 128, maybe even more. And then the IQ goes down to the midwit range when we look at people that have PhDs in humanities subjects, and in particular subjects such as education, when the IQ is down at 115, something like that. So that's what we're talking about when we talk about the midwit. We're not talking about we're talking about the person that is an intelligent person, but is in many ways not quite as intelligent as they think they are, and certainly not intelligent enough to be able to come up with original breakthroughs and do highly original things as genius scientists tend to do. So that's what do we mean by intelligence, of course? Well, intelligence involves solving cognitive problems. And there are all kinds of weak, though statistically significant relationships between intelligence and various traits. And what you would expect is that those relationships would hold particularly strongly or particularly saliently among the midwit, among the person that has an IQ of something like 120. When you get to people that have outlier high IQs, people that have IQs of 130, over 130, then interesting things start to happen. So, and the relationships are not there. So to give an example, being intelligent tends to be associated with social skill, weakly. There is a 0.3 correlation between your IQ and your ability to solve social problems. So intelligent people are good at solving social problems. They are socially skilled. They are altruistic. However, at a very high level of IQ, I mean, we're talking over 130, at an extremely high level of IQ, this relationship breaks down, because as I have looked out in another video, at a very high level of IQ, intelligence seems to become associated with aspects of autism, i.e. the inability, and this is itself associated with the inability to solve social problems, with being socially inept. Now, why does this happen? Well, it happens for a number of reasons. First of all, what is autism? Autism involves being highly, highly systematic. And the contrast to that is being highly, highly empathetic, very, very high in empathy. Now, autism helps you to solve problems because it means you're highly, highly systematic. You're obsessed with systematizing, and systematizing helps you to solve problems. Other associations with autism are things like taking in lots of information. So people who are autistic tend to be very, very sensitive to noise, very, very sensitive to stimuli or whatever. And the plus side of that is that they can take in huge amounts of information and therefore better solve a problem because they have more information at hand. And another dimension to autism is that you lack social skill. Well, how can this happen? Well, being socially skilled is weakly associated with intelligence. And as people become more and more and more intelligent, then the positive manifold between the different dimensions of intelligence, you have linguistic intelligence, you have spatial intelligence, you have mathematical intelligence, becomes weaker. As the person is very high on simply general intelligence. And what this in turn means, of course, is that the person who is very, very intelligent can be the Sheldon Cooper type, who will be actually quite unintelligent in things which an average person would be reasonably intelligent in, such as social skill, things which are weakly associated with intelligence, but will be super intelligent at solving problems. And so this is why at the extremes, the relationships don't work. At the extremes, the very highly intelligent people, the sort of genius intelligent people, these relationships don't work, but they are going to work with the midwit. And so what can we expect the nature of the midwit to be? Well, the key aspect of this, as far as I'm concerned, and understanding the midwit and how the midwit thinks, is what my colleague Michael Woodley of Manee has called the cultural mediation hypothesis. There is evidence that the more intelligence is associated with taking the dominant ideology, with taking the dominant way of thinking and adopting that way of thinking. So intelligent people will have a tendency to smell the air, as it were, work out what the dominant way of thinking is, understand that adopting or pretending to adopt that dominant way of thinking will help them socially and help their social chances, and therefore adopt that way of thinking and convince themselves of the veracity of that way of thinking. And they will indeed, because they are intelligent, be able to come up with superficially logical ways of persuading themselves of the veracity of that way of thinking, that are not really logical, of course, but they will seem logical. Now, why should these two things be associated with each other? Well, under conditions of Darwinian selection, we know from many, many, many studies that intelligence was being selected for. People, for example, in the 16th century, that were wealthy, had double the surviving fertility. The richer 50% of the population had double the surviving fertility of the poorer 50%. And that means we were selecting for intelligence. So intelligence was being selected for. But clearly, status was also being selected for, because the wealthier you were, the more likely you were in conditions of harsh Darwinian selection to pass on your genes. And so consequently, in a sense, intelligence is no good if it doesn't allow you to accrue status. And so the desire to accrue status comes with intelligence, those who things have been co-selected for. And so we would expect people who are highly intelligent, to also want to attain social status within certain boundaries. Because once you get to people that are very, very high in intelligence, of course, then they tend to be unworldly and not particularly interested in social status. But overall, you would expect people who were intelligent for this reason to want to gain social status. And they would understand that the way that you do that is by convincing yourself of the veracity of the dominant worldview and adopting that worldview as your own. Now, this, of course, is not associated with the pursuit of the truth. Yes, there is a degree to which intelligence is associated with desiring the truth and systematizing and wanting to know about the world. It's associated with intellect, point three, which is a personality trait, intellectual curiosity. But clearly, we have another factor here. Intelligence has been shown to be associated with adopting the dominant ideology. And there was a very interesting study by Woodley and Dunkel, which found that the more intelligent children are as they age, the more liberal they become, which implies that they realise that the dominant ideology is liberalism. They realise this is how you get on in life. They convince themselves of the veracity of that ideology, and they adopt it. So it is inimical to truth. The midwit, the kind of person who does that, is not going to be that interested in the truth. He's going to be more interested in the cultural mediation, in adopting this dominant ideology and convincing himself that it is the correct ideology. Sorry, my cat's getting a bit frustrated there. So then, of course, he has to compete with other people. Remember, the intelligence is going to be associated with desiring status. How do you compete if everyone who's intelligent is adopting this dominant ideology of liberalism or conservatism or whatever it happens to be? How do you compete with those people? Well, one of the ways you do that is by taking the dominant ideology and pushing it in a slightly more extreme way. And so, as we've all seen, if everybody believes that racism is wrong and morally wrong, and the way you showcase your morality is by protesting, is by saying, oh yes, I'm not a racist, then of course you have to be even more anti-racist than the next man. And so you engage in this competition in order to do that, in order to virtue signal, in order to showcase your virtue. And this is something that would be predicted by intelligence, and which you would predict intelligent people to want to do, and therefore which you would predict the midwit to want to do. So intellectually, we would expect the midwit to take the dominant ideology of society, to come up with ingenious or superficially intellectual ways of justifying that ideology, and we would expect him to attempt to push that ideology very slightly further, to incrementally push it further. We wouldn't expect him to radically push it further or be particularly original, but we'll come for the reasons that for that in a minute. So that is the first problem. Oh, I don't know what Martha's problem is here. We can't go out and do something. the problem is then the first problem with the midwit. The second issue is getting on with people. So one of the things that's been found is that that's associated with being intelligent is cooperation. People that are intelligent are highly cooperative. Intelligence is associated with altruism. It's associated with solving social problems and wanting to solve social problems. It's associated with signing petitions. It's associated with voting. It's associated with democratic participation. It's associated, in general, with sort of moralising. I'm basically wanting to get on with everybody. Now, why would this be the case? Well, again, under historical conditions, we know that intelligence was being selected for, of course, but another thing that was being selected for was basically the ability to get on with people, social skill, the ability to get on with people, because those that couldn't get on with people would be cast out by the band. And so what you would expect is for those things to have been under selection together. Intelligence would have been under selection, but so will the ability to get on with people and the desire to get on with people and the desire to cooperate and to have these sort of burger values of cooperation. And so the two things would become linked and you would expect them to go together. In addition, there's an extent to which you would expect intelligent people to be more, to literally be able to rationalise other people's minds better, to be able to work out what other people think and what other people desire, and in that sense, to be better at solving social problems. And so again, here, you see a way in which this is not something that we would associate with a desire for the truth. Yes, there is a degree to which intelligence is associated with systematising and a desire for the truth, but you can see something that pushes in another direction. And you would expect this to be true of the midwit. You would expect the midwit to put cooperation and the desire to go on with people ahead of the truth. He would have his his desire to solve problems and whatever and systematize and showcase intelligence, but he would also have a competing desire to cooperate and get on with people and be socially aware. And when those things came into conflict, you would expect him to have the intelligence to manipulate his worldview such that it was socially helpful. And that's what, of course, you see with midwit type people. The third issue is the issue of the so-called blind spot. Now, people who are reasonably intelligent will talk about bias. They will think it's awfully profound to be able to say that some people are biased and some people are not biased. Some people have motivations for what they're doing and they can't be trusted and whatever. They will think it's awfully profound to be cynical and sceptical. But in fact, it's been shown that people that are intelligent are themselves have a very specific kind of bias, which is that they perceive bias in other people, but they don't perceive themselves to be biased. So they have a blind spot when it comes to their own bias. They think other people are biased, they'll think I'm biased, but they won't believe themselves to be biased. Now, why is that? Well, if you adopt a belief, so if you, following the cultural mediation hypothesis, if you adopt the dominant worldview as your worldview, and you attempt to attain and play for social status by advocating that view... Oh, the cat is getting very, very frustrated here. Oh, just a moment. By advocating that worldview and so on, then you will be more convincing in your ability to advocate that worldview if you genuinely believe it, i.e. if you cannot be aware of your own bias, if you really, really believe it. And so there would be benefits to getting on in life. There would be benefits to under harsh conditions. There would be benefits to having this bias blind spot, to not perceiving yourself as biased, and thus being highly fervent in your advocacy of this dominant set of values. And so you can see how we would be under selection for intelligence, yes, but we would also be under selection for that. And again, the two things would go together, and consequently we would expect this certainty of one's own lack of bias, as it were, to manifest among more intelligent people. And again, we wouldn't necessarily expect this at the extreme of intelligence. We wouldn't expect this at the right tail. Outlier intelligence, things are going to be different. But overall, and therefore when it comes to the midwit, therefore when it comes to the person with an IQ of 120 or something like that, the reasonably successful person, the reasonably intelligent person, you would expect this. And this is what we can see. Now, another issue that you would is associated with intelligence is having an analytical attitude, or what you might say is a questioning attitude. Well, this is quite interesting in terms of as a rule, people that are highly intelligent will tend to question things and have a sort of questioning disposition. And so what you might expect is a person who is really quite intelligent to take something that's adaptive and take it too far. So remember, the person that is extremely good at solving problems, the person that's mega good at solving problems, the person that's brilliant at solving problems, is the person with the massively high IQ. Now, that person will be questioning, he will be analytical, he will be sceptical and whatever, but he will only do so in a way that permits him to ultimately solve the problem. So you would expect him, yes, he's going to be questioning and sceptical, but only within certain boundaries that permit him to solve the problem. You would expect people who were the midwits, who were less intelligent, to be less good at solving problems. And one way this might manifest is by taking things which would be associated with intelligence and taking them too far, in the sense that they might help to solve a problem, and taking them too far, such that they no longer help you to solve the problem, and they in fact mean that you can't solve the problem at all. An example of that would be being of a questioning disposition. To a certain extent, being of a questioning disposition, always asking, what do we mean by this? What do we mean by race? What do we mean by history? Define our terms. What is this? What is that? Can we be sure of this? Can we be sure of that? Does help you to solve problems. Taken too far, you end up in a situation where you can't solve problems at all, because the way that we solve problems is by breaking up the world into manageable chunks that permit correct predictions to be made, and from doing so, solving the problems. If you go too far in your questioning, you can't do that, and you are simply less good at solving the problem. And so that's why I suspect that it may be that you have this questioning dimension that's associated with the midwit, that at the moment that it's going to be the midwit that's always going to be saying things like, oh, what do we mean by race? What do we mean by intelligence? What do we mean by meaning? Another thing, of course, another dimension to it is simply that the person is an academic poser, who is not actually that intelligent at all, but who thinks they will come across as intelligent if they do that, because they think that's what intelligent people do, i.e. it's a self-conscious strategy. Right, the next thing that's associated with intelligence, then, is in general liberal views, liberal world views. Now, of course, is to do with the dynamics of change. People that are intelligent seem to be more concerned about harm avoidance. They seem to be more concerned about these general liberal ideas of kindness and empathy and so on. And now, again, there's a degree to which that can stand in the way of solving problems. A person, remember, who is very good at solving problems, who has very high IQ, he is only focused on solving the problem. He is analytical. He wants to solve his problem. That's it. As you move down, the fact that intelligence is associated with empathy and whatever can mean that certain things stand in the way of solving problems, i.e. that you have these feelings of empathy and whatever, and they mean that you can't think rationally, you can't think straight, and therefore you can't quite solve the problem. But because intelligence has been co-selected for with empathy, you do find this relationship between empathy and intelligence, but it's not there at the extreme. So again, you would expect people that were highly intelligent to be pulled into, but who are intelligent but not overly intelligent, to be pulled into things like this, to be pulled into these traps where they would commit fallacies and start to believe that, oh well, the fact that something is not very nice means that it can't possibly be true, because they would be overwhelmed by that thing that is associated with intelligence. Another interesting correlate of intelligence which relates to this is trust. People who are intelligent tend to be more trusting. Why is this the case? Well, one possible answer is that, as a rule, if you are not particularly intelligent, then you're likely to get conned, you're likely to get swizzed. And so, therefore, it pays to just not trust anybody. If you're more intelligent, you will be more perceptive, you will be more able to work out whether people are honest or not, whether you should trust people or not. And therefore, overall, you would be more trusting. Now, this has a built-in problem to it, which is that if you are trusting, then you will tend to trust people, you will tend to trust authorities, you will tend to trust people in positions of authority. And this is one of the things that you find with the midwit, of course. The midwit will tend to say, and this relates to, it was our squire, our elder son of a knight or younger son of a lord, who commissioned this video, and he pointed me in the direction of some appalling videos on the BBC about the nature of intelligence. And one of the things they do is they get these people who they say are unbiased academics, and they give their opinions which are illogical and not based on any data and generally ridiculous, on the nature of intelligence. And those are the authorities, and we're expected to believe them. Well, that is the kind of thing that the midwit will do. The midwit will be inclined to believe authority. The midwit will be inclined, if it's a left-wing government, to believe the government. If it's a liberal government, to believe the authority. If the authority roughly parallels the ideology of the dominant ideology, therefore the midwit will accept and believe that authority. Whereas the person who is more intelligent will be sceptical of all forms of, within reason, will be sceptical of all forms of authority. And so there's a sense in which the midwit will, and that's one of the reasons why I think midwits are prone to this fallacy of appealing to authority. Why are they prone to this fallacy of appealing to authority? Well, first of all, if people make complex claims, the midwit doesn't have the intelligence to be able to assess those claims himself. He doesn't have the wit and the wherewithal to be able to work out whether a claim is accurate or inaccurate. And so if that's the level of intelligence you're at, then it's easier to just say, oh, well, a person in authority has made that claim, a person who is less than authority has made the counterclaim, and therefore I believe the authority. A second reason is simply that it's a fallacy. If you are intelligent but not that intelligent, then you're going to be more prone to fallacious thinking. You're going to be more prone to bad arguments. And one of those bad arguments is the fallacy of appeal to authority. And so therefore they're going to be sucked into the fallacy of appeal to authority if they are a midwit, in a way that a highly intelligent person wouldn't be. A third thing, in fact, one of the things that you find with people that are midwits is they will tend to say, oh, well, this person has made this claim, which I don't agree with. And this person has made a claim about something to do with psychology, but this person's a biologist. And therefore, I don't accept that person's claim because they don't have the credentials to make that claim. They are not actually a psychologist. They are a biologist. And consequently, I'm not prepared to accept that they can make that claim. Well, obviously, that's a fallacious argument because the claim is either correct, it's either logically and empirically correct, or it isn't. But if you're not that bright, then you can't test this yourself and you can't think about it yourself. And so therefore it's easier to just say, oh, well, the person doesn't have the qualifications. And also, One of the fascinating things about that is that people who are geniuses, people tend to come up with highly original ideas, people like Einstein and Newton and whatever, what they tend to do is they tend to, because they tend to make massive breakthroughs, not just in the area in which they have been trained, but in all kinds of other areas as well. Why is that? Well, because they're just good at thinking. They're good at thinking. They're good at solving problems. And one of the things that solving problems involves is it involves noticing relationships between different domains. And it involves, therefore, noticing the relationship between this and this in a way that a normal person of normal intelligence wouldn't notice. And so consequently, it's inherent in people that are highly intelligent that they tend to notice what problem solving involves, what intelligence involves, is making relationships, making connections between different things. And so inherently, people that are extremely intelligent are going to make connections between different things, and they're going to therefore develop theories about areas that they have not been directly trained in. But a person who is a midwit, he's not like that. He's not capable of thinking in an original way. Thinking in an original way involves taking different strands of information and bringing them together into a model. They can't do that, a person of midwit intelligence. All they can do is be trained in something, learn information, and sort of add a bit on the end. They're incrementalists. That's how they think. They can't think in the kind of creative way. They've never had an original thought in their life. They can't think in a creative way. And so this leaves them very sceptical of people that do think in creative ways. And that's the thing. People that are genuinely intelligent, genuinely highly intelligent people, will make innovations outside of their area of training by their very nature. They will do that. And so you will find that the midwit is very sceptical of this kind of thing because the midwit doesn't have the intelligence to be able to do that himself. He can't comprehend that it's possible. Now, then we have, then, this is the nature of the midwit. This is who the midwit is. So he's a person who is reasonably intelligent, but he's not that intelligent. And this leaves him open to all of these problems, which mean that he is good at solving problems up to an extent. I mean that he is good at pursuing the truth, but only up to an extent. He is limited in his abilities to pursue the truth and to solve problems, and he is in a highly predictable way. Now, imagine what would happen if you got people like that, if you got people that were deficient in thinking in that way, and who were highly credentialist as well, whose view was that science is not to do with the pursuit of truth, it's a guild that you join, whereby you are given this magic qualification, this holy seventh seal, and therefore you're a scientist. If your worldview is that simplistic, that if a person has a qualification, therefore they should be listened to. Imagine if you got those people and you gave them a qualification which, in the view of society, rendered them a scientist, rendered them an academic. Imagine if you created a situation where people like that had doctorates. And that's what we've done. By creating this heavily overeducated society over the last 50 or 60 years, in which there's the complete, in which we go from 5% of the population or whatever in the 50s having a BA to 50% of the population, and therefore we have to increase in order to compete, you get more and more people that have master's degrees and more and more people that have doctorates. And having a doctorate is still seen, wrongly of course, but is still seen as a sign that you are part of the intellectual elite. So imagine if the IQ of a person that had a doctorate reduced due to the spread of the doctorate from 135, 130, all the way down to 120, 115. Imagine the consequences of that. Imagine, in other words, if a doctorate became something that was associated with being a midwit. Well, then, of course, the midwits would see themselves as they would no longer have the kind of humility that might be associated with being uneducated. They would regard themselves as having full access to knowledge, as being educated, as being part of the elite, as being authorities, as being worth listening to, as being able to become academics and whatever. Imagine if you did that. And so the consequence is that you would see the rise of the midwit. And once this happened, the midwit would start to push the genuinely intelligent person, the genius, the genuinely really intelligent person, out of the university. Because when it comes to getting jobs, they're both going to have PhDs, but the midwit is going to be more socially skilled. The midwit is going to be more conformist. The midwit is going to be more socially liberal. The midwit is going to be higher in altruism. The midwit is going to be lower in autistic traits. The midwit is going to be more cooperative. The midwit is going to be more sort of fervent and therefore inspiring. And you'll have this feeling that he's certain and confident. And therefore, you're going to want to work with the midwit. And therefore, the midwit is going to be employed by the universities. And the midwit is going to employ other midwits and other midwits and other midwits. And eventually, you will get to a point where empathy becomes more important than the pursuit of truth, where conformity to the current social dogma becomes the key issue in order to get a job at a university, where liberal views become the key issue to getting a job at a university, and so on. And eventually you'll get a situation where the whole university system gets taken over by midwits, and the people who originally were part of that system and who came up with brilliant original ideas are slowly pushed out of that system because they can't cope with the stupidity of the midwits. They can't deal with these people. They can't deal with their dogmas and their speech codes and their prizing of things above truth and whatever, and so they're driven out. And that is what the expansion of the PhD into midwit territory has done. Because remember, the midwit does not see science as being about the pursuit of truth. The midwit is the kind of person who will say, hey, guys, I'm a scientist. The midwit is the kind of person that will stress their academic qualifications because they're a scientist. The midwit is the kind of person who sees everything not in terms of the pursuit of truth, but in terms of the pursuit of social status, in terms of the pursuit of power, in terms of the pursuit of certain goals that they like, such as cooperation and kindness and whatever, but not in terms of the pursuit of truth. And so if you have the expansion of higher education and the expansion of the doctorate such that where the doctorate remains the gold standard of being an elite academic, the gold standard of being a person who is worth taking seriously, then those people will regard themselves as being worth taking seriously. Those people will lack the bias blind spot. They will see themselves as being worth taking seriously. They will see themselves as the new elite, and they will remove genuinely intelligent people, and you will perhaps, I think you're seeing it, start to see the decline of the university. So that is the psychology of the midwit, and that is why the midwit is taking over. The midwit is taking over because the midwit primarily is concerned with credentials and qualifications. We have seen the expansion of the PhD as the marker of the qualification you need in order to be an academic. The midwit takes up the PhD. The PhD's validity as a marker of being super intelligent is undermined. And once the midwit starts expanding into the territory of academia, then the midwit, because he's more socially skilled and whatever, can take over academia. And that's what we have seen, the rise of the midwit. Now, how do we identify a midwit? Well, as I say, I think a key issue if a person is a scientist, are they socially conformist? Do they espouse the dominant set of values, which is left-wing values? Do they tend to espouse the dominant set of values and add a bit on the end in order to showcase their not just their conformity, but their originality? Do they go on about and emphasise the fact that they have academic qualifications? Do they use fallacies such as the credentialism fallacy that you shouldn't listen to a person unless they have a specific qualification in the area in which they're talking about? Do they engage in the Dunning-Kruger? Do they say that someone's not as intelligent as they think they are? It's called Dunning-Kruger, this idea that that you get people that aren't as intelligent as they think they are. Now, an intelligent person, of course, a really intelligent person, wouldn't accuse another person of suffering from Dunning-Kruger because they would know that it hasn't been replicated that well and therefore they'd be sceptical of it. But a person that was less intelligent wouldn't do that. So do they use insults like that? These are the midwits. The midwits are everywhere. The midwits are running academia. The midwits will comment on this video using fallacious arguments. And we will only move science back to the pursuit of the truth if we stop the midwits from working at universities, if we stop the midwits from having any qualification beyond perhaps a bachelor's degree, and if we move back to a situation where the midwit is not part of higher education. And this expansion of the midwit has happened in my lifetime. It's happened in the 20 years ago when I was at university, the midwit was on the rise, but still a lot of academics, even in my theology department, were highly intelligent people, people born in the 30s and 40s. But since then, you've seen the rise of the midwit, the rise of social skill of the midwit getting you a job, and it is the midwit that is going to cause such serious problems in terms of science. We must fight the midwit. Well, I hope this has been of interest. And if it has, then you can see ways to help the channel, which you can see below. And remember, I live stream on Mondays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. UK time. And I put up a video once every week or 2 weeks. And I will see you soon. And goodbye.